From the Roots Up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Later in the show, we'll be talking to a Montreal lawyer, John Philpott, international lawyer, I should say, because he's practiced in front of some of these new UN courts. What's it called? The International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda was his first, I believe, but he's been engaged with the issue of international law and how it is done and how it is not done and how justice is done but not seen to be done. We're going to ask him about a matter that concerned us at the Taylor Report. We've talked about it many years, over the years, and that is... Why is it that these courts don't seem to be designed to have an end process that makes any sense? Primarily in the case of Rwanda, the people tried there. The United Nations has created a kind of a gulag of cooperating states that take prisoners, which is, to me, doesn't add up. Because obviously there's going to be a differentiation of quality and circumstance. And they've bumped into one in the case of Benin, where there are a number of prisoners, and John will tell us about that. But it is something for those people who give speeches and write editorials about how we got to have international justice. One feature people notice who've watched it is that they didn't seem to have planned on anybody ever being released and or found innocent. Actually, the presumption was they were all going to be found guilty. So again, this is the Taylor Report, and I want to say off the top, we've been talking off and on here about the issue of the outstanding Ontario labor leader and Canadian labor leader, Fred Hahn. And my impression is he is steadily and incrementally winning out against people who have really kind of targeted him, and not just once, but over the years, because he is a popular leader, a well-earned reputation for fighting for his members, all members, whatever race, creed, or color as expression is, and Ontario section of QP stood with him and behind him when their national office gave way to political panic or maybe opportunism. I don't know what motivated them, but they ran into, of course, a simple problem that their members could have told them about. It's called due process. It's also about, you know, not making decisions based on fear and hysteria, but simply looking closely at the matter and to treat it properly. Fred Hahn is obviously somebody, and his union, fight for all members. And the unions were the strongest force in society, well, among the strongest, to guarantee equality before the law and to respect for all citizens and anyone charged that they be given their rights are protected, and that somebody fights for them. And that's why Fred Hahn is successful. I really urge listeners to the Taylor Report, check out the articles. Linda McQuaig had a fine article in the Toronto Star in order to understand this issue. And in the Maple, Anna Lipman, who is a member of QP, had a very clear account of why Fred Hahn is an outstanding leader and why she supports him. And the she underlined the following. She said, I think the headline basically reads, I'm a Jewish member of QP and I support Fred Hahn. And she wants to know why and points out that there's been a kind of, again, the word hysteria comes up, where not the Jewish members of QP, she says, people don't seem to be interested in their opinions unless they are critical opinions. But the article outlines very nicely why this is the union movement has to be aware of this kind of the political storms blowing through society, which will bring political opportunists coming to try to score points or to undermine people who are simply doing their job. And so, again, it's Anna Lipman, and that article is in the Maple. The Maple's done a lot of really great writing, actually, on the whole issue since the beginning of the attack on Gaza, which people, again, Canadians understand that this is what is driving the discontent and unhappiness and, of course, demonstrations, popular actions, is this power that has missiles and an air force and an army and is backed by NATO, Israel, is directing its fire on a population. They say they're fighting Hamas, but every mosque is blown up, every hospital is blown up, every university is blown up, and every day there's new casualty numbers, and there's even the spread of polio. I mean, it really is unspeakable, and the International Court of Justice has heard the arguments coming from, led by South Africa, and South Africans are quite knowledgeable on what apartheid is, and they have brought the case that there's racially motivated attack on the Palestinian people. And so it's something that so long as the bombs are falling, people are going to be, their teeth are going to be on edge. They're going to be loud and uncomfortable. And yes, there will be things said which are deplorable and actionable on by various people, because once a population is inflamed, and the flame comes from this conflict, an unequal conflict, which is, I may as well say now, I think you have to keep an eye on American politics. They turn any international issue only has meaning for them if they can find a way to take advantage of themselves, one another, in their domestic politics. So when you hear that the U.S. is the mediator, and we've talked about it on the show, and we have to repeat, they're not a mediator, in fact. They are a bloody participant, as they well know, because their Congress leaps to its feet. When Netanyahu comes, they compete with each other to applaud. By the way, he's going to be back speaking at the United Nations latter part of Netanyahu, who is going to be at the UN latter part of September. But domestic politics governs this. They are now in the mode of, you know, how to make what is happening in Gaza pay political benefit to them. Long, long ago, Ronald Reagan was campaigning against Jimmy Carter, and there were American hostages in Iran, and it was clear that Reagan did not want those hostages released until he could get into office. And the day he got into office, they were released. And you say, it sounds like somebody arranged something. It was a political football. They turned a human crisis, a human drama, tragedy, they turned that into a political football. And Americans now are turning Gaza into a political football. The debate is going to come up. It's going to be really interesting to watch these two, Harris and Trump, how they play this. But remember that that's the country, Harris and Trump, Biden, that says it's the mediator of the what is going on, of the peace process. And I think they're calibrating what happens just to work to their own benefit. And so I would watch the dates. And on the matter of release of hostages, there will be some coordination, in my opinion, between both on October 7, which is going to be quite a day in our country. Everyone will be talking. The U.S. will be, everybody in the world will be talking, because it'll renew all the old fights, only on a higher and sharper level. And then when the election happens, close to the election, things will happen, which will be reflecting American domestic politics. There's a joke, actually, that in terms of how the U.S. does its politics. Kamala Harris, in addressing the matter of peace talks, she says over and over, it's her mantra, "The president and I are working around the clock to bring about a ceasefire." That's what she said, around the clock. And how does anybody keep a straight face listening to that? Because we all understand, actually, she's running for president. She isn't missing any rallies. She's at attending every place that she can attend according to those who plan her schedule. And so how could she be working around the clock to bring about a ceasefire if what she's doing is running as the designated character for the Democratic Party? And similarly, we know, now we all know, that Biden gets a lot of sleep and that he's not terribly concerned about much of anything. And he's working around the clock. Of course he's not. That's absurd. I'm sure he hasn't missed a nap in all this time. And yet they say this. They look right into the camera and say, we're working around the clock. No, you're not doing anything. You're twisting. Your people who work for you are twisting some arms and providing arms, actually, all at the same time. So it's a pretty... It's a cynical process. I'm not sanguine about the potential outcome. I think that the military campaign of Israel is going to continue, and they will occasionally pay lip service to being concerned about prisoners, although the Israeli public doesn't seem to believe them for good reason. But I think they intend to pursue this. You can't actually win, but you can kill people. You can, if you want to say that you have found and killed somebody, that constitutes a propaganda value, I suppose, in some quarters. But the issue of Palestinian nationality, Palestinian rights, and Palestinian statehood has already been decided. And so it's true. You can, as they used to always quote somebody from the the Greek, you always have to go to the Greeks. One of the Greek politicians said, well, they've created a desert and they call it peace. You can do that, but you really actually haven't solved it, your problem. But I do think that the policy of annihilation is probably going to be implemented. I think that's terrible. And I'm glad that the Maple and Ben McQuaig and others, I'm glad that people are speaking out. I know I'm glad that people continue with the demonstration. But if a process is run by the prime arms supplier and the principal power behind one of the combatants, it will end in a manner that is satisfactory to them. It won't be satisfactory to anybody else, but that's the long struggle. This is the Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. I think just, I wonder if we have a little union music. Did we find that? It turns out we did find it. So we're going to play a little of that, and this will be a tribute to Fred Hahn and the union movement, and we'll be back.
There once was a union maid. She never was afraid of goons and ginks and company finks and the deputy sheriffs who made the raid. She went to the union hall when a meeting it was called, and when the legion boys come around, she always stood her ground.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die.
This union maid was wise to the tricks of company spies. She couldn't be fooled by a company stool. She'd always organize the guys. She'd always get her way. When she struck for better pay, she'd show her card to the National Guard, and this is what she'd say.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die.
Well, what do you know? We're back. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. There's a story. You realize this is, to me, shocking. Here it is. We're only a few days away from September 22nd, which would be the anniversary of the day when the Canadian Parliament decided to humiliate itself in front of the world by standing on its feet and applauding a man who was in the Waffen-SS. And then they all said, oh, gee, how did that happen? Well, because you're a bunch of ignorant blankety-blanks. It's the primary reason. It's just political theater that they're not very good at. And the backdrop of the point about that, to me, is that now we also have a matter that the archives of the Canadian Archives, Library Archives, are scheduled to make public the, or to scholars, the identities of 900 approximately individuals who entered Canada at the end of World War II and who were later found to have all been members of the Waffen. Or something close to it. And to show how conscientious we are in our struggle against people who commit heinous crimes or are associated with organizations that did, you know, this thing about, oh, can you show that the guy did something? Well, they made a decision in 1945-46 to bring these individuals. They largely came as a group. And Canadians would like to know about this. The Wiesenthal Center has talked about it. The scholars who are trying to document the crimes of the Waffen-SS and other organizations that were pledged specifically to the German leader Adolf Hitler. When I say pledged, these were, in this case, Ukrainians who swore allegiance to a German leader and put on the uniforms and carried out the crimes. And to show you how deeply we're involved in a swamp of hypocrisy and lying and just a ideological train wreck, they decided they should consult with people. They had made a discreet list of people they consulted with. It didn't include the Wiesenthal Center. It didn't include organization B'nai B'rith. It didn't include historians who have been trying to document the crimes of organizations who were not truly military. They were actually enforcers of a racist ideology that led to the annihilation of European Jews. So they weren't consulted, but the various Ukrainian organizations were. I'm sure that Chrystia Freeland can explain that, and I'm sure that Poilev really wants to know not. And put that against, you know, everybody says, how did it happen that they applauded this gentleman on the 22nd of September a year ago? Well, that's how it happened. And thank goodness we have some outstanding journalists. Mr. Pugliese of the Ottawa Citizen has been excellent on this. The reason, here's the reason we'll never know anything about it, except what they want us to know, and people will be silenced to try to talk about these things, is that they can say, and this is Chrystia Freeland's way of talking about it, well, we don't want to do anything to that'll add to Russian propaganda. So if it's true that 900 came here, and I don't know if I care about their names, 900 came here consciously and deliberately brought here. You're telling me that's Russian propaganda? If it rains and Russia says it's raining, are we supposed to say we can't agree with them that it's raining because that would be helping Russian propaganda? It makes that kind of sense, which is no sense. So we had this incident. Incidentally, there was a time when someone like the individual, name escapes me, Yaroslav Hunka, I guess, Hunka. When they said, well, clearly he belonged to an organization, shouldn't have been here, they used to immediately begin a process of, well, you have to remove him. This has not happened. And to further add to the silliness around the event of a year ago, Mr. Zelensky was here with his wife, and they were among those applauding. And we had to all go through a silly little dance about, oh, we've embarrassed ourselves in front of him. He didn't care. He has people like this individual living free and prominent in Ukraine. It's just a fact. So the idea that, oh, we have to apologize, what, for kind of screwing it up by, you know, pulling up the veil and revealing a bunch of things? There's nothing to be apologize about. He himself, if you'd all just left it the way it was and said that was fine, he'd have been fine with that. That's why we're in such a problem with this stuff. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. There's I think we should call attention to the fact that France has a new prime minister now, and he comes from a right-wing party that received 5% of the vote. And the party that received the most votes, led by Mr. Mélenchon, way more than 5%, and was the came in as the winner of their parliamentary election. He has been passed over and will not be recognized, and instead we're going to have a right-wing individual, and this is according to the Macron. So, you know, the West likes to continually call themselves superior and regard themselves as the forefront of freedom and democracy. First of all, they didn't name the guy after the election. They didn't even choose a prime minister, and Macron sat there for as long as he could do it before he finally made his decision. And I'll put a finger on what I think the problem is with Mr. Mélenchon. It's not only that he is, of course, an avowed socialist, which is still legal in the Western world. It's that he has begun to argue strongly that France should pull out of NATO. France was never enthusiastic about NATO in the first place. I'm sure he has that opinion is very popular. There's a link to also the thoughts of the people talk about what's happened. There was a vote in Germany where they said, oh, the right wing won in some places or got some seats. By using the word right wing, they think your brain is going to turn off. What did they run on? They ran on saying that they do not agree with NATO's continuing war and Germany's involvement in the war in Ukraine. That was what they ran on. The second thing they ran on was that they said that they objected to so many Ukrainians coming to Germany. It's funny that a label left, right, center can be attached to these things. Just talk about the facts. Europeans have every reason to be concerned about a potential third conflict. We have two. And the records for mass mayhem and death were set in World War I and topped in World War II. And we're talking about tens of millions of people. And yet you would think, if you read the editorials, that violence and uncivilized behavior is somewhere in they call the global south. Actually, the most violent people, clearly, in modern times, are people who you would identify as Europeans. And when they kill on an industrial scale. So Mélenchon has spoken up, and he would make a very good prime minister. But he's not going to be allowed to be, even though he has his party won. France is drifting into a real problem, and we'll see how this impacts. But it won't stop the lecturing coming from Washington and Ottawa and Paris of the people that outside what they call the garden. You know that the top guy in the European Union said, we live in a garden, and all the poor undermensch, he didn't use that word, but close, they all want to come to our garden. And so it looks like the gardeners are preparing actually to clobber each other once again. This is the Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. There are things we're going to be watching on the show and let you know about that we think are important. There has been a split in Bolivia between Evo Morales and the man who succeeded him is now currently the president of Bolivia, and that looks like real trouble. The party of Morales has expelled the guy who's sitting in as president. The accusation against him is that he's not representing the party, that he's becoming what they call a neoliberal and representing the imperialist interests. So we think that's something to watch. It's also the indigenous issue, because the supporters of Morales he championed the rights of the majority of the people who are indigenous in Bolivia. So that's a kind of important. It's also the government of Venezuela has taken the decision to no longer permit Brazil to have the diplomatic interests of Argentina in Venezuela, and they've made this decision based on the fact that the several right-wing elements, people who had advocated the overthrow of the Venezuelan government, made their way into the Argentine facility, and those responsible for the facility is now Brazil, and Brazil has criticized Venezuela, saying they didn't agree with the election process. So now we're seeing a rollout of consequences. Again, because we understand that there's the issues of colonialism, imperialism, these are worldwide, and so we don't just cover what Biden and Friedland and Trudeau think. We'll come back to this thing of the 900 Nazis. I want to conclude on that one, that the issue shouldn't be now, in terms of politics, we shouldn't be just saying, oh, give us the names, which you have, by a commission. The names came out of a commission that studied what happened when the fascist elements, pro-fascists, were brought into Canada in great numbers. We need to know who did that, because the 900 didn't have the key to the door. The key to the door was in the hands of Canadian government, just as it was in the United States. I understand there are criminals, yeah, that we instead knowing about, but how about the enabler, those who made it happen, let it happen, and saw to it, as a matter of fact, made sure everybody was comfortable and everybody got settled. Sure, I should mention, I know you all know, Chrystia Freeland's grandfather, the one that she admired so much in her youth and said that he guided her and all that. He would be likely to be on the list, or I would put him there, since he was in Poland putting out a pro-Hitler paper all during World War II, and she has never decided to talk about that with any of us. And more importantly, since we claim to have a free press, nobody has ever asked her. No, CBC has never asked her. CTV never asked her. Nobody did, because they all know that that's a question you better not ask. Could you just tell us about your granddad in light of what we know about him? So, anyway, this is the Taylor Report. By the way, there's a wonderful woman, Sarah Freeland. Now that I've said Freeland, I have to say this. Friedman, a director who won a prize at the Venice Film Festival for the best film. And if I'm right, she spoke briefly and clearly. And we have a short clip of her words, if I'm right. And according to the thumb I see, I am right. So we're going to play that, and then we're going to come back and we'll be talking to John Philpott.
As a Jewish American artist working in a time-based medium, I must note, I'm accepting this award on the 336th day of Israel's genocide in Gaza and 76th year of occupation. I believe it is our responsibility as film workers to use the institutional platforms through which we work to redress Israel's impunity on the global stage. I stand in solidarity with the people of Palestine in their struggle for liberation.
Sarah Friedman. By the way, I checked out her work. She is, this is one of those things, of course, it's going around the net and people are talking about it. She's very eloquent. She's very brave. Because the main reason people don't speak out is they have the, you know, to worry about survival. And as I said, people's nerves are on edge because people are dying in great numbers. And Friedland. Okay, I'm sorry. Now we got it, Friedland. And you know, there's something to be said for big noteboards. Sarah Friedland. Anyhow, her work is really quite interesting. Her films, she was trained as a dancer, and she studies movement, and she has done a film. The one I was looking at was how the elderly are use how dance much of they use dance in order to provide the, you might say, appropriate exercise and whatnot, but it's also, she says, beautiful to watch. And so I take my hat off to her as an artist, but also as, I would add, a courageous artist. This is Taylor Report. We'll be talking to, I think we're going to be reaching John Philpott soon. And I'll just remind you that of the importance of that issue of that people. Oh, another person who's speaking out is Naomi Klein, and she has given a. She's decided to really research the issue of the origins of political Zionism, and she's really quite eloquent on the subject, and I'm very impressed with her scholarship. And all you have to do is put her name in, and do the research. But the clips of her talking are available.